how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
PGA Nation, we are back. And you know what? You know what we're doing tonight? We're heading to Canada. And since we're heading to Canada, we decided things have to be done differently tonight, right? There's no opening. There's no intro because that's not the Canadian way. When you go to the Canadian way, we get right into things, okay? Forget the intro. We have a tournament to talk about. And so that's what we are doing tonight. I'm excited to break it down with you coming off what was a pretty good week for the squad. Spencer, congratulations on the win. Great draft last week. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Joel. I've given myself the number one pick. And as I've talked about many times on this show over the past month or two, that seems to be my kryptonite spot. So we'll see what ends up happening this draft. I do have some takeaways of this tournament, and those are answers that we can discuss once we get into the actual picks and plays. But good to be here with everybody tonight.
Well, will your takeaways be highlighted in the course breakdown or in the draft, or maybe both?
I think they kind of coincide with one another a little bit. There's an answer with a couple players that we can have a discussion about once we get into the actual picks, but it's a unique course because we don't get it every single year. There's a lack of data and then a restoration that occurred. So when you get two of those things merging into one answer, it's typically a little bit more challenging from a model building perspective.
You call it challenging. I call it fun. Same thing. I'm looking forward to learning from you. David, coming fresh off a 75-1 hit. How you doing tonight?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. My profuse apologies to both of you because that was completely my fault that we completely skipped the beautiful intro that we have done up for this show. If you haven't watched the show before, go and watch the other episodes. You'll see what the countdown usually looks like. Some nice like theme music going on. It kind of gets you into the mood for the draft cast. And I was the one who was a little late. I know Joel often gets the blame for that, but this was on me this time because I had to shift rooms where I usually record this today. So was running a little bit late and we were kind of chatting and then I just went like, okay, let's go. And then just like click live without clicking the video intro first. So they made for some fun content though. It was really fun to watch Joel kind of midway through sip of water, just go like, oh, okay, we're here. We're live. So yeah, overall, I'm good, mate. I'm good. It was pretty heartbreaking last week to read the news about Grayson Murray. And I think we need to acknowledge that because anytime someone who's 30 years old loses his life like that, it is a tragedy and it's incredibly sad. And it was just a reminder for me. I mean, I put a post out on Twitter about my own experience, but not just in golf, but also in battling alcoholism. And the reason I shared that is I do feel that there's still a lot of misunderstanding about what this disease is and the way that it does affect people's lives and tragically results in loss of life for very young people. I've lost many friends to alcoholism in a variety of ways, very few of which have actually been direct alcohol poisoning. Like for the most part, it has been sadly suicide as Grayson lost his life last week. And it was incredibly sad to see that news. So I just want to reiterate to everyone watching this week that I care about every single one of you. We all need to be kinder to each other. We never know what the other person that we're speaking with is going through. You know, let's reach out to each other, especially as men. We're really bad at doing that, you know, so let's just reach out to each other, talk to each other, get real about how we are, what we're doing, and let's look out for one another a little bit more. And you know, if we all do that, I think the world can be a better place. And you know, outside of that tragic news, it was a good week on the golf front. We had Nacho Oviedo on the DP World Tour, hit a 75-1 winner. So that was very, very nice to wrap out the week in a nice way, getting a winner over on the DP World Tour. And it's been a pretty tricky year for golf punters, let's be honest, because Scottie Scheffler is like winning everything at like $2. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people like Chris Kirk, who are just winning at like 300-1, and there's kind of been no in between. So it was nice to find a little bit of value last week and kick off the rest of the year, and hopefully it kicks on from the year and we have another successful week at the Canadian Open.
Well, I appreciate that message, David. You know, we like to have fun on this show. We joke around a lot. It's golf. It's a sport. It's mostly fun and games, but it's not always. And some people have real life problems and real life issues. And last week was incredibly sad. And I'm glad, David, you got your message out as someone who can relate at some level. And I think your message is powerful and a meaningful one in that, you know, maybe some people aren't the best with communicating or saying what their needs are. But even if you feel like you're there for someone, showing it and actually saying it can go further than you might even realize. And so being there for everyone, being kind to people and helping and showing support certainly can't hurt, right, at the end of the day, right? And you know, I think that that's a very powerful message and it certainly was heard this week. But we do have a golf tournament this week that we will get to. So prayers to Grayson and his family, incredibly sad. He will be missed by the golf community, that is for sure. But this week, we will move on to the Canadian Open. If you guys recall, last year, it was won by Nick Taylor sinking an absolutely absurd 100-foot putt. Off the top of my head, when I think of absurd putts, and I'm being honest, there's two that stick out in my mind. There's last year's Canadian Open, where Nick Taylor made this ridiculous putt to win the tournament. And there's, I'm assuming most people will know what I'm saying, because if you're watching our show, you scroll Instagram and Twitter, and you've probably seen the clip of old man Jack Nicklaus at an event getting called out by, I think it was with Gary Player, on how he can't make a putt, and he goes out and he, from the middle of the fairway, sinks this like 150-foot putt, and everyone's like, what? It was like that level of absurd last year. That's what sticks out of my mind. Now, of course, this is going to be a different course. So as Spencer said, some different things to look at. But if you can get any, if we can capture any of the magic from last year and having a Canadian sink a ridiculous putt to win the tournament and have that celebration, then you remember Adam Hadwin got tackled on the green because I thought he was a fan. It was just straight chaos. We're looking to recreate some of that chaos this year. Live players might be gone, but there is still plenty of fun to be had on the golf course. So, Spence, as you referenced in the beginning of the show, your work is certainly cut out for you on this course breakdown in that there's only a couple times I've even played on this course, and it was before they've done course renovation. So essentially, it feels as though it's basically a brand new course that we're playing. But Spence, I want to pass it to you to give us a breakdown on what you're looking for this week.
So Hamilton Golf and Country Club has undergone three major transformations over the last 100 years. You look at renowned English architect Harry Colt. He designed 18 of the current 27 holes in the property that you have in 1914. We saw Robbie Robinson add his flair in 1974. He included those extra 9 holes that obviously aren't going to be in play this week when we only have 18 of the 27 with the way that this is built. But this property underwent that third alteration that we're talking about in 2019 when Martin Ebert performed a restoration that cost $11.5 million, and the purpose of the restoration was trying to restore it closer to what Colt had envisioned in 1914. This is back-to-back weeks of the PGA Tour going to a course that had taken on this exact moniker of trying to go backwards in time, build it for modern technology, but have the same restorations come into play to kind of try to get you into that mindset there. So we have received this venue, as you said, Joel, very infrequently on the PGA Tour. The last iteration is going to be in 2019. During that example of the course, we got this extremely tight strategic test off the tee that diminished accuracy by over 7% versus a standard stop. The one minor change that will get this go around will be the increase from 6,832 yards to a little above 7,000 yards. I don't necessarily want everybody to hear this short yardage and think that this is going to be such an easy birdie fest. It's interesting. I've seen the winning score. The projection is at 18 to 19 under par, depending on what shop you're looking at. McIlroy's victory was a runaway 5 years ago. He took a bomb and gouge mentality. He was long off the tee. He was accurate off the tee. He made a million putts. It's not necessarily the layout that everybody's going to take, but with the softer conditions, and I'll kick it over to David at the end of this course breakdown. I'll let him talk about the weather, how this course is going to be playing softer. When Ebert rebuilt this course, one of the things he did is he took all 27 greens and he included your classic bent grass and Poa split. He also added new tees and a modernized bunkers throughout the property that I believe is going to keep this facility very similar to what we saw 5 years ago, but do it in a fashion that's probably better for today's game regarding positioning. All of those answers are complicated, you guys, because you don't want to start extrapolating out projections on information that you don't necessarily know the long-term returns for. So I played this much closer to expectation of the long-term data where I could find things. And this is something I talk about quite frequently at venues where we don't have a lot of information. How does somebody play on a short course? How does somebody play at a par 70? Look at these Poa bent split on the greens. What kind of production did I get there? I didn't necessarily find that many differences, maybe compared to some people. And I know one of the interesting answers that I've seen said a million times just over and over again is that when you get these tournaments with less information, there's an ability to show off your nature of building a model or talking about numbers. Like, I don't believe that to be true. I would rather have the statistical data and to be able to build out in that direction. As I said, I'll let David talk about the weather right now. This course is very soft, and I think that's one of the reasons why this winning score is starting to move up the board into that 19. Maybe we even get to 20 of what it closes at. But David, what do you see about the weather right now and how it's going to affect the course?
Yeah, look, I mean, fantastic as always from Spencer, especially a week like this where we've only had four iterations of this tournament at this golf course in the last 20 years because the Canadian Open, and I think rightly so for a national open like the US Open does, needs to move to different golf courses each week. So I thought we did a superb job there. I was really struggling this week with this golf course, if I'm honest, because I think I've seen arguments in both directions, one being that if you're a long driver, a lot of the fairway bunkers can be avoided if you can carry sort of 300, 305 yards consistently with your driver. And with only two par fives and a large number of par fours as a result of that, there may be something to be said for those longer drivers, especially given some of the length of the par threes as well. Like, you are going to tend to have a long iron into a number of the par threes, and those who are better with driving distance are generally going to have a shorter club in their hand on those long par threes. And then I've seen the complete opposite argument of, like, it should be fairway finders and you need to find the short grass. And I think difficulty for me as well is that a lot of the superintendent notes aren't filled out as comprehensively this week as they have been at others. Like, we have no idea what length the rough is. Like, is it 4.5-inch Kentucky bluegrass or is it two-inch Kentucky bluegrass? Like, who knows? Like, all we know is the grass type. So that is a struggle. I do take Spencer's point. I think it is going to be soft. There's been a ton of rain today, particularly. Tomorrow's going to be overcast all day and really cold as well. So I think the group that's going to benefit the most from that is going to be Thursday morning. It doesn't look to be a lot of wind in the forecast as it currently stands, but in saying that, Saturday the winds might pick up a little bit as well. So as always, look, jump into the description here. We've got discount promo codes on our memberships at the moment, and we'll provide all of our latest weather updates right up until tournaments start, because they can make a huge difference when you're building your DFS lineups, especially when making the cut is the priority for your six of sixes.
Well, there you have it. Got a lot of work cut out for us this week on trying to understand the course. And I think David and Spencer both made some really good points. The one I especially align on is, you know, you want, in my opinion, you want to have that extra data preferred, even if you are, you know, skilled at this, for the reason that that'll just make it more precise on what golfer should be a good fit, right? Yes, you might be able to get a few details, maybe a small edge here or there by just, you know, having the data and running the models over some of the general folks. But I think the precision over a course and a field of 150 golfers and understanding the data is the preferred method. But that won't stop us tonight. We are still heading right in to the draft. And for those of you that are new, if you aren't logged in on YouTube, go ahead and log in on YouTube. You can participate in the draft through the chat. The audience will be drafting their own team. You're in the fourth slot tonight, so it'll be a snake-style draft. Spencer first, David second, me third. Audience, you'll have two in a row, just like your standard fantasy football draft. The one caveat is you do need to stay within your DraftKings salary. So you can't just draft all the best players. You do need to ensure that you can afford each golfer that you select. For the audience, the way you lock in your pick is a player is nominated by anyone. The first time that that player is mentioned a second time in the chat during your pick, it is then your final pick. We will rely on team captain tonight, Zach Jeffers, who typically lets us know what the lock button, which is the pick that is in to finalize your pick. Without further ado, Spencer, the first overall pick, you are on the clock.
This is not the route I was planning to take when I started, and maybe this is where the detriment of putting myself in the number one spot ends up unraveling here. Here's my assessment, and I understand ownership, and there are a couple golfers near the top that are going to be very highly owned. I would make an argument that all those names that have a bunch of ownership to them, it's rightfully so. There are weeks where I disagree with the public sentiment. This is not necessarily one of those. And we look at Rory McIlroy here at 12,100. I know there's going to be a lot of ownership. I assume we're going to be around 40% when it all closes. I have him at 37% right now. The high end I've seen above 40. The low end I've seen at about 35. My model's taken an aggregated total there to put it at 37%. I just thought that at 12,100, when we got pricing going down to the $5,000 range this week, that Rory was made way too cheap. We can make the argument that this is not the same scenario of Scottie Scheffler because Rory has more of a boom or bust potential. We know with Scottie, he's essentially a locked in top 10, top five, if you really want to look at what he's been doing recently. Rory does have the propensity to go a little bit wayward at times, but when you look at Rory and his ideal skill set and the ideal courses where he uses that skill set, it's always these soft venues, tree-lined courses, the ability to use a driver off the tee, which I wouldn't have normally said this is the type of venue for that, but with this being soft and what he was able to do to this course, as David talked about, of just hitting it past a lot of the danger here, I think this is a great course fit for him. I think he's too cheap. Number one in my model in weighted strokes gained total, number one in recent strokes gained total when you gear it to Hamilton. He's number one in my model in strokes gained total on par 70s. Number one for weighted scoring. And then the one category that I really liked is the height and proximity, which takes some of these expected proximity ranges and buckets here, which there's going to need to be more of a hand calculation that's done because there has been the renovation. But you add that to the short game, he's number one in that area too. So it was a really strong profile from Rory, who's trending this week for this tournament. And we know about his history at all RBC Canadian Opens, including this tournament, which he took down in 2019. So I'm going to go the popular route. I'll figure out how to deviate from the popularity there. But Rory McIlroy, 12,100.
You know, I like the pick. One thing I'm touching on, I don't need to talk too long about why Rory's a good pick in this draft. Obviously, he definitely is the best profile golfer in the draft. But one of the topics we touched on before we launched the show, which I'll touch on again now, is how different playing this year is with how watered down the fields are with LIV gone. And what that's really done at the end is magnified even more the top players. Because you take a guy like Rory McIlroy in a field that included, you know, the likes of your, you know, Joaquin Niemans or Mito Pereiras and John Rahm, all those guys. And again, not these tournaments, not everybody played, but there would typically be 5 to 10 more B plus to A minus players in the field that we're no longer getting. It makes someone look like Rory look even better, right? He's like, hey, there's only a few guys that can even compete in this tier, and now Rory's one of them. And then you layer that on with the 5K range that enabled making that possible, and kind of makes it feel like if you can, you got to go there. And so that's what I think the biggest difference we're seeing this season from the past. And DraftKings sees that too. I mean, they're pricing it differently. Where we saw, you know, Scheffler price in the 13K range, you know, maybe you would get Rahm or Scheffler at 12K. last year in their peak. But for the most part, this was territory that we haven't seen a lot of that now they're going back to. And obviously, Rory's playing better right now, but I think it's more because of what you're comparing him to than it is that he's won, you know, the last five tournaments and Rory's just unstoppable. So I like to pick Rory will be in my pool, but I think you got to adjust how you play with, you know, the new fields that were being thrown at us this season. David, you're on the clock with the second pick. Would love your take on Rory first.
Yeah, look, I mean, as Spencer said, Rory's just deservedly at the top and should really be more expensive. I mean, if you look at the tournaments where he's won this year, he won the Dubai Desert Classic, which he's won multiple times. He won the Wells Fargo Championship, which he's won multiple times. He won the Zurich Classic as well, along with Shane Lowry. So, I mean, you know, that event's kind of weird. But the other two events he's won, he's in tournaments that he's got a good history at. And kind of seems that same recipe here. He's turning up at the RBC Canadian Open, again, an event he's won multiple times, but also at the golf course that he's seen once and won at. So, yeah, I think you can very justifiably say that he's too cheap. He should be more. My only concern comes, as you said, with the renovations. Is it something where that changes some of the recipe that he had here last year? But look, I mean, it's Roy McIlroy, whatever. Stick him at the top of your lineup, take him in the first pick, and I'm not going to argue too hard with you. So as a result of that, I would have very happily taken Rory with the first pick if I'd had it. But I'll take the other name that I like at the top, which is Sahith Theegala. Look, I just think that Theegala is a much better golfer than he's getting credit for. We all knew the upside he was getting in 2023. We saw it. We saw his ability to absolutely spike. We also saw his ability to, like, make dreadful missed cuts. And the thing that's impressed me in 2024 with Theegala is his ability to add consistency to his game. And we see that in his results and the nature of the fact that if we're not that sure what this golf course is going to play like, well, he was 12th at the PGA Championship at a long golf course, but then he was second at the RBC Heritage at a shorter golf course, which was a lot more fiddly. Similarly, he was 9th at the Players Championship at a golf course where if you're wayward off the tee, you can find water and trouble pretty easily. And then before that, he was 6th at Bay Hill, one of the strongest driving golf courses on the tour. And what that speaks to me is that, one, he's showing up in the best fields, and this is not that. We know this is a weak field. But also the fact that his game is at such a level now that's proving pretty transitive. He can perform at all these different golf courses. And at a golf course where we're not that sure how it's necessarily going to play, I think that's a solid way to start a build this week.
Oh, I love Sahith Theegala this week as well. I think you said it spot on. And even at the 10-5 pricing, he's priced up. I still don't think the golf world has fully come around to Theegala being, you know, basically an all-star level golfer, right? He's in that upper tier now. He's shown it. You know, he's, in my opinion, the most likely to top 10 of anyone other than Rory in this tournament. And so, you know, I think as the season goes on, he'll start sticking up in this top tier. But for sure, you know, our show, we've been early on to him. We usually draft him in every show that we're on. I'm glad the pricing is starting to catch up, but the guy will definitely be someone in my player pool. All right, I'm going to, with the top two players off the board, I'm going to shift here and I'm going to look at a value pick. I'm going to head down a little bit to a guy who we haven't played much of this year, but if you follow along with the DraftCast in history, you know, this is a golfer who's historically been one of my favorite players. He's been out with injury for a long time, and I think he is back, and I am ready to go back and play Daniel Berger. Daniel Berger has, you know, shifted. We're seeing some better results. He was 45th at the Charles Schwab last week. Didn't play very well around the green, which is the main event, but he's been outstanding off the tee. His approach numbers have been very strong. I think if he can show up this week and make a few putts, I think you're going to see a very good result. And Daniel Berger at only 7,700, I think, you know, outside of maybe the top five or six guys, is as good as anyone in this field. So I think it's a great value and what also won't be huge ownership. So I really do like Daniel Berger a good amount. And eventually that price and ownership is going to have to get adjusted. The results will start coming. We know he's a better talent, as we've seen in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And, you know, he's still recovering from that injury, but it looks like he's starting to get there. So, audience, it looks like your first pick is in. Great job. We'll wait for one more. But while we wait for that second pick to come in, I'd love to get feedback from you, Spence. Will you be playing Daniel Berger this week?
This is taking long-term data into the mix here. And you know, we'll see how back Daniel Berger can get, I guess. No puns intended there with that, but he's number one in my model in strokes gained total on short courses, number 13 on strokes gained total on par 70s. This has typically been the recipe for success for him when you give him these shorter venues where he's able to use that skill set to the mix. My model's starting to come around on him much more than it did with some of the early season data that he put together after the very first tournament. He kind of went from a name where I didn't have a lot of information on him past the data that I had before he came back. And then all of a sudden he went in the wrong direction with the data. And now we're starting to see it come back in the right direction. So I'm think he's an intriguing play for a golfer that we're looking at. I don't know what you see right now, Joel, but I mean, I have this at fringe, like range of like 7%, like you're borderline one way or another, which definitely does seem a little bit too low owned for him.
Yeah, right now mine is saying 10%, which, you know, I'm even fine with 10% at this number. David, how about yourself? Will you be playing Daniel Berger this week?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have Berger at around 8%. I think that's a result of there's a couple of other names right next to him where they're going to attract a lot of the ownership and probably take it away from him. And I think Berger's like a completely fine play in a large GPP. We know he's got the upside. He's making consistent cuts now, which is really promising to see. I think a lot of people expect golfers come back from injury and immediately just be able to like turn up and just perform at the same level. And that's not the reality. I mean, it does, you do need to get some reps in, which he's now done. But we know that, you know, he was a top 10 player in the world when he was at his best. And if you're going to be early on him, I don't think this is a bad spot to take that route whatsoever, especially when the ownership's so low. So like that play.
Boom. I love it. Now, the audience, off to a good start. Both picked in quickly. So I'd like to applaud the audience for starting off hot, getting the draft moving. The two picks are going to be Alex Noren and Tommy Fleetwood. Both golfers that have been on the rise, been playing good golf, heading in the right direction. I think it's a really good start to the draft for the audience. So my only slight negative feedback on the two picks is I feel like you're using a lot of salary for those two guys to start this draft, but I think you'll be different. I think most people will start with a Rory or Sagala. So being Noren and Fleetwood as your top two should be unique, and I like the player. So endorsed by me, would love your feedback. Spence, will you be on Noren or Fleetwood this week?
I guess the thing I would say, Joel, and maybe I end up being wrong here, a lot of people are going to start with Rory. Like, we know that answer. I do think Noren and Fleetwood will be a very popular start for lineups. I said this with Byron when we did the Roto Baller show yesterday. You look at Noren and Fleetwood, like, Noren is the 1B version, essentially, of what my model has for Fleetwood. These are projected, and I very loosely use the term projected here because they have not won on the PGA Tour, but they are projected top five win equity candidates inside of my model that are going to carry some ownership, but have the skill set here where there are very few courses that I could think that are better for these two to actually get across the finish line than what we're going to perception wise get at Hamilton from everything that I'm able to at least find from within the data and all the information that I know about the course. So they're going to be popular. I tend to think both of them are good chalk scenarios. I was hoping Fleetwood was going to be lower owned than this. When I wrote my article yesterday, my assumption was going to be Rory's 40% plus owned. The Gaul is going to be 25% plus owned. And I was hoping we were going to get Fleetwood in this position where he was 13, 14%. Fleetwood and Thegal are very close to one another. I think that they are a virtual coin flip from one another in value. I bet Thegal at 22-1 when he opened. I didn't bet Tommy Fleetwood because he was 18. That was the only difference that I had in those two. But I mean, in all reality here, I like every pick that's been made, and there are some popular choices on the board, but we look at the very top of the board. I would say Rory, Thegala, Fleetwood, Noren, and we could make a couple arguments about who else should be in there. Like, those are definitely four of your top six or seven win equity candidates this week.
Boom. There you have it. All right. For my second pick here, I'm going to preface this by saying every year during this tournament, I feel like I need to take Canadians, like they're representing their country, they're going to play, and they typically don't do well. They typically, you know, I mean, last year Nick Taylor won, but typically it's not like they usually come out and do well, but I still can't control myself. I'm like looking for Canadians playing well to show up at their tournament, and I'm doing that right now, and I'm going ahead, I'm going to take Adam Svensson, who we've seen his ball striking has really been good. You know, I think him coming home, it could be a show-up moment for him to go through. You know, we've seen him make a ton of cuts this year. You know, he doesn't get you too many of those top, you know, 20 finishes, but he's making cuts. I think this is the week he makes a few putts because that's what's holding him back. Everything else is there. He needs to make a few putts. I think he can do that in the home country and get a stellar result. At 7,300, not a ton of risk. I think he's a pretty safe play as well. I love the way Adam Fitz is playing. I thought he could have been priced up a bit higher, upper 7K range. So I'm happy with that pricing. I'll ask you first, Spence. Will you be on Adam Svensson at all this week?
I'll ask both of you guys the question first before I get to this. I did not place this head-to-head bet. And I've asked every single person I've been on a show with. My model loved this. I had trepidation for a couple reasons. And maybe it's because of Svensson's boom or bust nature in my model a little bit. I worry about the putter. I worry about some of these metrics, the way that they're forming here. Do either of you guys have thoughts on Svensson over Kevin Yu this week?
Is it even?
It is minus 115.
I'll let you go first, David.
I like it from the perspective of I don't think you're going to get a lot of long irons this week other than the par threes. Like a few of the par threes are over 200 yards. But outside of that, it seems to be a place where someone like Kevin Yu, who has driving distance, isn't going to need to reach for his like 150 to 200 yard shot. And that's typically the area where he tends to do the best. And I'd say of those two golfers, Kevin Yu's like the most volatile. If he could come out and finish to have a great week, or he could easily miss the cut. Whereas Svensson's on a really good run of made cuts, and he isn't getting the pay dirt at the end of the week because of the putter, but the approach metrics are really there, which is a really consistent way, I think, to build results.
Very quickly, Joel, before you answer, it's funny. I've had three people answer that question so far, and that is the exact answer I've gotten all three times, where if you're looking for upside Kevin Yu, and that's the right answer. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't play it. Because Kevin Yu has the spike nature in his game. You look at the ball striking metrics. They are brilliant. Like, he jumps into the top five of a lot of those areas of my model. The short game pushes him in the wrong direction. You get a very similar profile here with Adam Svensson, but you get it with less upside and a little bit more safety. And safety markets and head-to-head matchups are usually what I'm looking for, but there's just something about this play that continues to make me not go down this route. I do think there's value. This would be more than a 3% edge in my model, but I'll very quickly let you answer it, Joel, before we move on.
Well, what I was going to say is, looking at both, they're both very similar profile golfers. They're in the same category any way you look at it. So, you know, if I was looking at it, it's probably a no bet for me because I just think they don't see a big edge either way. But in a head-to-head, I think I agree with David's answer as well is, in a GPP, Yu is probably the play because he might have the upside in the boom. In a head-to-head, I'd probably go Svensson. I think Svensson's probably the safer option of the two that I would make the head-to-head matchup bet. So I do slightly prefer Svensson. I think he's a little safer, a little bit more consistent, but they're very similar profile golfers, ball strikers who, you know, need some help with the short game. But the edge this week is it's in Canada, and Adam Svensson's Canadian, so that's why I took him. That has no logic to it. I always think, and it worked last year, so we're going back to it this year. Canadians going to step up and win in their home country. That's my play. David, who are you taking with your second pick?
Well, funnily enough, I'm going to take a Canadian, and I was quite afraid, actually, that you were going to take the Canadian that I was going to take when you mentioned that route. It's interesting when history gets broken like it did with Nick Taylor, which, by the way, we tipped up last year at 66-1. We got that one correct. So not only was the crowd going nuts when that putt drained, but we were too, having sweated a very, very sweaty playoff against Tommy Fleetwood there. I think Oakdale was interesting in that it was very easy to determine what type of golf it was going to suit. It was going to be driving accuracy and a lot of wedges, and we're not that sure this week. But if we are going down that route of driving distance, you know, maybe Nick Taylor now broke that barrier, and we actually see Canadians now go like, okay, I want to turn up. The other factor is that the President's Cup is in Montreal this year. We have seen consistently Canadians turn up and perform really well at tournaments because they are all desperate to make that President's Cup team and represent the international side in Canada on home soil. So on that basis, very chalky, but I am going to take Taylor Pendrith. Other than last week at the PGA, in his last appearance, sorry, at the PGA Championship, which he missed the cut because whatever, you know, it's a top-class field. Outside of that, he had four consecutive top 11s, including a win as well. I think that if we are looking down that driving distance route, he obviously has plenty of that. He has the ability to spike with the putter as well. And if I am going down this route of trying to avoid the trouble off the tee or just out-hit the trouble off the tee, I think Taylor Pendrith is a really, really good option for someone who is in excellent form outside of a miscut in the major, which I can always easily forgive.
I like that pick a lot. I think he's a really good value. And similarly, there's a few guys in that range, Pendrith being one of them, that seem to me that not only are they underpriced, but also not taking too much ownership. Like a lot of times we see guys in this range that are underpriced and end up getting, you know, close to 17, 20% owned. I'm only seeing about 11%, which at this price for him, I happily play him at 11%. So I definitely like that pick. Spence, you got two. Would love your take on Pendrith first.
My model had him as one of the better values in the $7,000 section, whether you're looking at the price tag or you're comparing it against ownership. Inside of the top 15 for me in all three iterations of how I ran it from overall upside and safety. David talked about the added distance that he brings to the mix. And one of the things, and I talked about this category ever so slightly already, but I ran this height and proximity plus short game. And what height and proximity means in this spot are the more realistic ranges that iron shots are going to come from, and then comparing it to the short game metrics of players that are either going to be able to salvage par from that or make birdie. We know Taylor Pendrith's biggest weakness would be the irons in these spots. But when you added the short game to the mix, he was a massive climber for me inside of my model and expectation. And that's one of the reasons why he climbed into the top 10 from an overall rank. So I think the price tag is too cheap. I think it's a nice profile of a golfer who outside of last week is trending in the right direction right now.
I love it. All right. You got two here. You started with Rory. How are you following that up?
I guess I'm going to play a game here of a little trial and error to see what a lineup looks like when I do this. And I've seen the audience joking about taking all the $5,000 and $6,000 golfers. And here's your chance at this moment, because I'm going to leave myself in a position that's going to get gross very fast here. There was one golfer, and this is definitely a Joel name of over the years. I would be curious. I would think that Joel probably would have taken him if it would have fallen back a couple more picks here. But when we look at this board, you look at the very top and you want to say Rory, Thigala, Fleetwood, whatever order. I mean, Rory and those other two, whichever order you want to put those other two in. Those are the three favorites. I then think you find this mix here with a lot of options, whether it's Norin or Sam Burns or any of these other options that are very close to one another here. There was one name, though, and this was an outright answer because he opened at 50-1 and that number has plummeted down. We're at 35-1 now, and I think that's sharp move above anything else there. But this was a golfer for me that should have been priced in that same section with a lot of those players because he has those prerequisites for upside that I'm looking for. I'm going to take Tom Kim. I think this price tag is way too cheap. I know some of the proximity numbers are going to leave a lot to be desired, but when you look specifically for these heightened proximity ranges that I keep talking about, he jumps to fifth overall in this field for me. So a really nice course fit for a golfer who has started to gain off the tee again. And this is now where this puts me in the position where I'm going to have no money. I talked about there being a couple names at the top I really liked. Sam Burns is the other one here. The ownership has started to climb much more than I was anticipating when I wrote my article on Monday. I thought he was going to be a sub 10% option at this 15% mark that we have right now. I have that about the break-even total. I don't know if necessarily we're in a spot where there's a ton of value based off of that, but one of the upside climbers in my model who has distance here for this venue and has the putting that you would want to see. And that's kind of the one combination I keep looking for is guys who can hit it long, guys who can make putts. And then if you want to look for whatever this is worth for the proximity ranges here, that is also going to be Sam Burns' weakness. But a very similar answer to Thagala would be, I'm always trying to find those two names when they get an increased projection in proximity for me. Thagala was a big mover. Sam Burns was also a big mover. So that's not going to leave me with much money. I'll have to play around to see how we can round this up. But I do think that with this Tom Kim price I have here, because I think he's $1,000 too cheap, I kind of think I have three of the top six projected win equity candidates, and then we'll figure out what we can do from there to close it.
When I started thinking about, you know, what my comment would be on those two picks, the word that just kept coming to my mind is win equity. You just took two guys here in this tournament that clearly have win equity. These are two proven PGA Tour guys who we know can get hot. And I think pricing-wise, that they're both good values at, you know, Sam Burns at 9.4, Tom Kim in the mid-8K range with the amount of win equity they have in this tournament, I think are two very solid picks. David, I'd love to get your feedback. Will you be on Tom Kim or Sam Burns this week?
I've said before, and I think my answer is still the same, that I'm probably out on Tom Kim just until I see a little bit more. Like, his last four tournaments losing on approach, the putter's really concerning for me because that's such a fundamental of his game. In saying that, you know, if you can get a little bit different by taking him, if ownership ends up a little bit lower, then that could be an interesting option. But for me, he just seems to be getting a bit of traction this week, and I can't quite put my finger on why. On the flip side, Sam Burns was who I was going to take. So that's a straight steal from Spencer. I really like his driving distance, the carry distance, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if that is going to be the route that we think is going to be the way to out-hit a lot of the danger. Well, Sam Burns has a ton of that. I think he never gets enough credit for how long he is off the tee. But he's also an awesome putter. And it was interesting in his last appearance that he lost so many strokes putting, which is just so atypical for him that I could see some regression happen pretty quickly for one of the best ball strikes on tour. So certainly endorse the Sam Burns pick, and but annoyed that I'm not going to get him.
Boom, another pick stolen. All right, David, you got your third pick here. About 8K per pick left. Who are you looking at here?
Yeah, again, I'm going to take someone who's going to attract a little bit of ownership, but I do promise I'll get different later in the draft. Part of the reason is I don't think that I'll necessarily get this player back on the wraparound. So I'm going to take Davis Thompson here. I just think that he's playing at an awesome level at the moment. The fact that you both winced probably tells me that I probably stole that from both of you. But second at the Myrtle Beach Classic and then 17th at the Charles Schwab. Seems to be playing really well. And the approach metrics, the distance that he's getting off the tee, the fact he's still accurate off the tee despite that driving distance is really promising for me. And look, I just think that he's playing at a much better level than his salary here suggests. I would have seen him probably in that like 8,300 to 8,500 range, and getting him at 7,800, I feel that I'm saving a little bit here. So nice to get revenge on Spencer stealing the Burns pick with Thompson there.
Well, I will confirm you. He would not have gotten back to you. I would have taken him with one of my Dexter bags. I like Davis Thompson this week as well. Again, another value. I think there's a lot to like in the 7K range this week. And I think he's another one that I will be on. Spence, can you confirm, were you also looking to draft Davis Thompson this week?
There are three players in the $7,000 section. When I ran my model and I tried to find the top 60 players in the seven categories that I ran. So that's just general safety that you're going to get into a profile there. There were three golfers in the $7,000 range. If you look at David's second pick and David's third pick, those would be two of those options right there. So I think David's team, regardless of having Sam Burns or not having Sam Burns, is off to a very strong start. It makes me feel a little bit better knowing that Thompson wouldn't have fallen to me, Joel. Because I guess I made my own bet. I had the option to take him, but I can promise you he would have been my next selection.
Well, good. I'm glad I could help you feel better about not getting your guy. David, congratulations. Squad's looking good. All right, with my third pick here, I'm doing the thing I promised not to do again and taking another Canadian. I can't help myself. I just can't. It's just something about it. They've already risen above because of the tournament, and that's Corey Connors. You know, Corey Connors, again, it's a similar theme for me. You know, obviously it's glaring what he needs to improve on is his short game, but he's one of the best ball strikers in the field. He's red hot. I mean, he gained 7 strokes at the Wells Fargo, 7.8 on approach at the PGA Championship. His ball striking is elite in this field especially. I think he's going to be one of the best ball strikers. You know, he's lost strokes around the green and putting, you know, for the last 2 months. So he's going to have a turnaround there. If we can just get him to neutral on the short game and, you know, not lose strokes, I think he's going to get you a top 10, if not win the tournament. So maybe Corey Connors will be the one to reverse the Canadian lull and come back and follow Nick Taylor's footsteps this year and have that great Canadian result, the Canadian Open. But I am taking Corey Connors more because of how well he is striking the ball. I think that will translate on this course. Spence, how about you? Will you be on Connors at all this week?
I think Connors is one of the best cash game plays. I worry about the putter ever so slightly, but it's hard to argue against his profile for this tournament from a safety metric standpoint. And specifically, if you remove putting from the mix, he jumps into the top 5 for safety. So really nice profile here. We know about the ball striking. As you said, Joel, it just comes down to how many putts does he make.
There you have it. All right, audience, we need 2 from you. I see it looks like 1 is in. We're waiting on 1 more lock before your turn is over. It looks like it might have come in. Before we get to the audience picks, David, will you be playing Corey Connors this week?
Yeah, I really like Connors this week. I think he's an excellent selection. And I've spoken about Connors. I've drafted him a couple of times on the draft cast lately. And one thing that has just not been talked about enough is the amount of driving distance that Corey Connors has added in 2024. Like, he is genuinely adding a ton of speed to his swing. And we've always thought of Corey Connors as just like this accuracy-based guy. We'll only play him at courses where it's going to be like really narrow because he can use his driving accuracy. Well, that recipe is kind of changing to Connors. And the approach game is just like off the charts. I also like the fact that this course has bent grass greens. It's something pretty rare that we see on the PGA Tour. It's not often that you have bent grass compared to, say, Bermuda or Poana tend to be the predominant types that you see. Well, Connors obviously has played very well at the Masters across his years, and that's, of course, on bent grass greens. So if we're looking at a case where he's basically been field neutral putting for, like, the last few tournaments, like, he lost 0.16 per round at the PGA, 0.47 per round at the Wells Fargo, 0.22 per round at the Heritage, it's getting better. Like, he's not losing like 5 strokes putting, and that's what you need to avoid with Connors, because he can out-hit his putter a lot of the time because his approach play is that good. So do really, really like the play. I would have liked to have got him at some point in this draft.
All right. We have the audience picks in, and it looks like it's going to be, how do you pronounce it? Meisner?
I think it's Meisner.
Meisner's lot. Listen, he played well last week. He was someone I was looking at in Showdown. I don't know much about him other than he looked good last week. But, you know, coming off a good week last week, I wouldn't be surprised if he did it again. And Van Ruyen as the follow-up. You know, I thought – I'll be honest with you in saying I don't love Van Ruyen. He's not a typical my guy. He is playing wetter, better more recently. I just thought – he was a little overpriced. I prefer Van Ruyen as a value play than, you know, one of my core plays in the 8K range. So I will not be on him this week, but I can see him having a good result. So I'm not going to say, you know, don't play him. Like, I can see it. Just not going to be in my player pool. Would love your feedback. David, will you be playing Eric Van Ruyen?
Yeah, look, I think the interesting with Van Ruyen is he was 20th here. He's played here previously, so he's got that experience, which not a lot of players do, and the fact that coming into that tournament he wasn't necessarily in the best of form, so he was able to kind of show up at an event here where you know, he wasn't in like red hot form and just come off a missed cut the week prior, is always interesting. I think he's actually even elevated his game since then, and the approach metrics are definitely eye-catching. His ball striking is excellent. Nick Mazin is an interesting one for me because actually I was a little bit early on him. I think it was the Texas Open maybe that I tipped him where he finished 10th. He was at big triple figure odds that week. So he played very, very well. My concern here comes with rule 17. You don't play the chalk under 7K. And Mac Mazin is absolutely going to be the chalk. So that would be my only concern for the audience there.
I think that is very, very fair feedback. Spence, how about you? Are you on Meisner or Van Rooyen?
First of all, with Van Rooyen, I wish they would have made him cheaper because it's taken away ownership, and I did not plan on playing him this week. I'm more on Joel's line of thinking. There's upside to the profile. If you look at any of the recent metrics and how they trend towards Hamilton, he jumps into the top five of expectation here. On the flip side of that answer, he has struggled historically on some of these shorter par 70 courses. There were a couple hiccups in the model for me that pushed him in the wrong direction. I think he's overpriced at this number, which is why I wish he would have been cheaper and people would have wanted to play him, and then there would have been more of a decision. So I'm not going to tell anybody that he's a bad play for DFS because he does have upside in his profile at sub 10%. As far as Meisner's concerned, when everything opened on Monday and just in the outright market, and unfortunately this moved before I even got my model officially built and prices out, Meisner was the best bet on the board for me. And you can credit Datagolf for that one. They moved that number before anybody had the potential to get to it if you didn't get to it early. And my model was in agreement there. I do tend to agree, though, with David, for such a boom or bust profile that we have with him. This feels like one of those spots where I will rather just have him beat me because I don't really want to play a 12% owned golfer where, yes, the upside is very enticing, but the floor has some cracks going in it right now.
All right. There you have it. For my fourth pick here, this is starting to become a guy who's becoming one of my guys. I think this season I've been drafting him a lot. I'm going to draft him again. While he disappointed me more recently, I think he's a better golfer in profile than they are pricing him at, and the ownership hasn't followed. So I'm going to go ahead and take another chance on Akshay Bhatia. You know, yes, I acknowledge he missed the last two cuts. It's obviously not what you want to see. But if you actually look at the metrics, you take a deeper dive, not many guys under, you know, 8.2 or 8.3 are going to have the capability of spiking on their ball striking as well as Bhatia have, as well as the upside with his putter, right? He has all of those, that upside that you're looking for in a tournament like this that a lot of these guys down at this range just don't have. You know, he's going to have to turn around. The last 2 weeks, you know, wasn't it for him in that he missed the cut at the Charles Schwab and he missed the cut at the PGA Championship. I think the PGA Championship is more excusable. It was a major. He still gained strokes on approach. Missed too many putts. The Charles Schwab was a bad week. He just didn't have it. With lost strokes pretty much everywhere but the driver, which I think is the eye-popping thing because the driver, some would say, is the biggest worry with him. And the fact that he gained strokes there, I expect him to turn it around on the approach play with his irons and on his putter. And if he can find any consistency with that driver, I think he gets another very good result this week. Let's start with you, Spence. Will you be playing Akshay Bhatia this week?
I think he's a good pick. I think if we're talking win equity, which we've talked a lot about, he's one of the steady climbers for me in my sheet. I don't know how he's going to react to this. He was very close to Grayson Murray. Oh. I don't know what that exactly means for his outlook for this tournament. He's definitely going to have a heavy heart entering this contest. The results have gone in the wrong direction since his victory, but the profile and the statistics are as high end in my sheet as you can find for the price tag. And if you didn't go that route, Joel, he was going to be my pick. So like between you and David, you guys have successfully stolen about every single person that's in that 7,600 to 8,100 price range.
You know, I think that's interesting. You know, the Grayson Murray thing, that could go either way. I mean, you could be grieving and, you know, just not be able to find your game and just kind of be off. Go the other way. You could be extra focused and try and go out there for your friend and have a better result. and not something I'm going to factor into my decision. I'm going to just play him based on the metrics and some of those things you just can't control either way. And you, obviously, you hope he goes out there and is able to kind of channel his inner best self and play well for him. So, but that's interesting context because I didn't know that they were close, but you know that is a factor to think about. David, would love your take on Batia, and then you got one more.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with basically everything that's been said. I think that you can't really tell how someone's going to react to that grieving process. I think that's really, really difficult to get into someone's mind. And at the end of the day, we're just going to end up guessing, and it can go both ways. It could be something where you don't feel like going out and playing, or it could be something where you're absolutely galvanized and you want to do your best to absolutely honor the friend who's passed away. So that just becomes something where it's a question where we can't really know the answer. What I do like with Batia is the approach play is just like off the charts. Like his ball striking is epic. We always want Batia to come out and have a putter, but especially in a large DPP format, Batia and Thigala kind of for me go hand in hand on those sort of golf courses where if you were looking for upside, they're two of the better options that you can look at. All right, so as I said, I would have loved to have had Sam Burns in this position to kind of round things out. And just looking at the average salary remaining, I think I'm going to have to go and take this player first, and then I can take who I want to a bit further on because Spence won't be able to afford him. So I'm actually going to take Ryan Fox and give a little bit of a shot on the Kiwi here. Look, if we're thinking that driving distance is going to be a factor, given the fact that a lot of the scoring here is going to be on longer par fours, the fact that we can out-hit a lot of the trouble if we can avoid the fairway bunkers off the tee, it's quite a Rory McIlroy's way for success. Foxy looks like he's finally starting to find his feet again. And so he's had two top five finishes in his last five appearances. He had a fourth at the Zurich Classic, fourth at Myrtle Beach. He was 32nd at the Charles Schwab last week. Tons of driving distance off the tee, but most promising is that his approach pace is starting to increase as well. And one of the other things I do like with him is that complementing at a course like this where his driving distance is going to be a factor, he has got that ability to go to a 2-iron off the tee and seek some more accuracy if he does need to. And also the other thing I'd add is that he's very good with his approach under 150. He won on a kind of a similar course in on the DP World Tour at the BMW PGA Championship. Tree line golf course tends to play a little bit tougher and really honed in on that approach play. And I think his ability with the wedges could become a factor on a shorter golf course this week as well.
You know, I looked at him this week. I know he's your boy. You've interviewed him. He's showing up for you. He had slowed down a while, but it does seem that he's starting to turn that corner again. I think we're starting to see some of that better golf from Ryan Fox. I think heading into tonight, I was a little bit on the fence. Knowing you're back in, I think I'll push me back onto Ryan Fox will be in my player pool. But Spence, would love to hear from you on Ryan Fox.
I'm usually anti-Fox in a lot of these spots. I don't have that sentiment this week. You look at the height and proximity, sixth in this field. You look at strokes gained total on par 70 courses, eighth in this field. I think he's going to be able to use his distance and his proximity ranges that are going to probably be in front of him. He's an interesting, I don't even want to call him boom or bust candidate, but he has a very high ceiling for a golfer that's going to be sub 5% owned.
There you go. Absolutely right. I love it. All right, Spence, you got two here. Back to back, only 6,600 per pick to go. How are you going to fill out the rest of this squad?
I said this when I made the Rory pick. This is also not the plan I was wanting to go here. I would have loved to have been in a spot, and I would have done this a little bit differently, whether it's Akshay or it's Davis Thompson or it's Taylor Pendrith. There were a lot of options. And for the record, I'm not going to take him. So the third name that would have been a $7,000 golfer who landed inside the top 60 of every category was the surprising one of the mix that's not going to have any ownership to him because of the back-to-back missed cuts, and that's Ben Griffin. I do like Ben Griffin this week. That's going to be one of my ways that I'm going to try to get contrarian and different, but I feel motivated by what Joel has put together with his build of Svensson and Connors, and I want in on this. If we're going to play a Canadian tournament, I'm going to take a Canadian golfer. So I'm going to take Mackenzie Hughes. One of the safer profiles. There's a lot of ownership around him, but We talked about Connors being one of the safest golfers in my sheet. Hughes had that exact same profile, just with a real putter. He can actually putt where Connors cannot, but he has a top 10 return for safety. You look at some of these strokes gain metrics when you gear it towards Hamilton. He climbs inside the top 20 for me, and he's number one in weighted short game when you take the around the green and the putter here. So I'll start with Mackenzie Hughes, and then I am going to take the player for me who was the best value on DraftKings. Meisner might have been my best value in the outright market before the ownership came. It's a little bit of ownership with this golfer, but I'm going to take Chandler Phillips. Phillips has been really boom or bust this season, but my model saw him increase his expected off the tee data by more than anyone in this field for the track. He moved from outside the top 100 to inside the top 30 when faced with similar courses. Add that to his top 25 weighted scoring output. That saw him grade in the top 40 for all three par ranges. There's only three golfers when you look at par three, par four, and par five scoring that accomplished that top 40 in each one of those things. That's further down this board. One is Chandler Phillips. One is Jacob Bridgman. And then the other one is Andrew Novak. So I'll take Phillips here.
I think it's interesting. I was surprised by the Mack Hughes pick. I like Mack Hughes, especially the Canadian nature. I was more surprised because of the amount of money you had left. I was like, how is he going to make that work? But, you know, you found Chandler Phillips under 6K. I think if you're going to be value diving to find someone under 6K, I think Chandler Phillips makes a lot of sense. So I like the way you work that out there. David, would love your take on Hughes and Phillips and then your fifth pick.
I wondered if this tournament was going to play a little bit like the Copperhead course of the Valspar Championship. And so with that Chandler Phillips pick, Spencer has now got Sam Burns, who has won that tournament back-to-back, and then a fourth or a sixth, and then Chandler Phillips, who finished third at that golf course earlier this year. So I think that's an interesting way to build if we think that this might play a little bit like Copperhead, which is something that I suspected. For my pick, I think I'm going to have to go and take a golfer that maybe a steal. We'll find out. I know that I will. I don't think I'll get this player if I don't take him here because of what Joel's got left. So I'm going to take Mav McNealy at 9,200. It is who Joel was going to take from the look on his face. No? Okay, perfect. All right, that's fine. Look, I just think Mav McNealy's playing better golf. And when we're looking at 9,200 for Mav McNealy, I just think there's so few people who want to go and pay $9,200 to play Mav McNealy. But he's playing really, really good golf at the moment. And in the 9K range, I'm having at the second lowest ownership, Adam Scott being marginally lower. I think that he has the ability, he's well-rounded. I think that's what I like most about his profile. You know, he's got plenty of driving distance. He's not too inaccurate off the tee. We know he can fill it up with the putter. We know he can get hot with his irons. He's very, very good around the green as well. So there's the scrambling aspect there too. And I just like the consistency that we're starting to get with his game. At a golf course that we're not too sure exactly how it's going to play, I feel that he's playing a lot people than people giving him credit for. And I just think that nobody wants to play him at 9,200.
I think Mav McNealy is a very interesting to make. And I thought about him the same way you did. I think going into tournament, I was almost looking for him. Like the way he's playing, it seemed like it'd be a good spot. But then I thought he was a little overpriced. And then when I saw the pricing, I said, all right, well, good. They should keep the ownership down. But I'm seeing like 15%, which I thought was surprisingly high for him at this price. So if he does stay at a high ownership at this price, I probably won't play him. But I do think he has a lot of upside, and he's an intriguing pick because of the way he's playing. So he's definitely a profile of a guy that I like, and I think he can definitely have a good result this week. For me, who I was actually looking at with this pick, I liked McNealy, so I made a face because I liked the pick. But who I was looking to take here is Shane Lowry. You know, and I'm taking Shane Lowry more just because he is the best golfer available at this point. You know, I'm paying up for him, but he certainly has as much upside as I need for this. He can go out there and win this tournament and get you a top 10. I have the money to afford him. So, you know, by starting with my value, it enabled me to have the spot to pick up a guy like Lowry at this spot. I was also considering taking Cam Young. I'm okay with taking Cam Young here. I can only have picked what between one of the two. If you're prioritizing distance off the tee, then you might want to go Cam Young. But I think Shane Lowry is more of a winner, has more of that win equity. So I'm going to lock that in for myself here. Audience, it looks like your first pick might be in. We need two, so let's get the rest of those nominations in. to finalize your pick. But while we wait for that final pick, we'd love your feedback on Shane Lowry. We'll start with you, David.
Yeah, look, I mean, if we're looking at correlation on the DP World Tour to Wentworth, you know, another tree-lined, somewhat tricky golf course, where Ryan Fox won, Shane Lowry won that tournament the year before. So the approach metrics are very, very good. We all know what Shane Lowry's weakness is, and I get that. But we've also seen him start putting pretty well at the Masters and show up in that tournament kind of consistently. So he may quite like the Ben Grass Greens. And obviously he had the win earlier with Rory McIlroy, and getting to lift trophies again, I think, is always a positive for any golfer.
I love it. And I have to say, I'm very upset with myself. And I'll explain why. The audience picks are in. They went with Hubbard and Seamus Power. And I'm upset with myself because I was planning to take Power with my next pick, and I should have just looked ahead and saw how much money the audience had and taken Power first, because they wouldn't have been able to afford Lowry. And I didn't do that, and I allowed them to steal him from me, which I didn't really think he'd be on many people's radar. I really wasn't worried about it, but that's what I get for not being prepared. So audience, needless to say, good pick. I was going to take Power there. Hubbard, I think, is also a very good play. I think Hubbard's coming in a little too higher owned than I would like to see him. But I think in the 7K range, he's a solid play this week. Spence, would love your feedback. Will you be on Hubbard or Power this week?
Seamus has been catching a lot of traction the last 24 hours. He's starting to be very close to 10% ownership from some of those early totals that had come out. I think that's a little bit too popular for me. The safety numbers like him, some of the upside numbers don't necessarily. So I'm probably not going to play Seamus with all the popularity that he's catching in the space, but the profile is pretty safe for what I have in my sheet. I don't love taking it. Like, this is one of those examples where we're looking at a 10% or higher owned player that has the negative leverage for upside. Like, I'd rather in large field contests shoot for what my model perceives to have a little bit more upside.
All right. Bang, bang. There you have it. All right. For my last pick here, I am torn between two guys. Obviously, it was going to be Power. It is no longer. And it's between Rio, who you know is one of my guys I draft often, and I'm considering Bobby McIntyre, who we've seen, you know, he's going to be pretty low owned. We've seen him kind of spike at the PGA Championship to give you a top 10. Definitely not consistent with the ball striking, but he's good at the short game. I think he's very a boomer bust type play in McIntyre, which is what has me torn. But I am gonna stick with McIntyre here. I think McIntyre has the upside. I think he could have a good showing and make some putts. So that's going to be my play. I know it pains me because I just have an affinity for Rio, but I think McIntyre is the right play here. So we'll go to you on that one, David. Will you be playing Robert McIntyre this week?
He was someone that I was looking at in the draft as well. I do think that's probably the route to go here. I know that we've all discussed what upside Hosatsune has. The concern for me comes that this golf course maybe doesn't suit the driving accuracy. I mean, look, we don't necessarily know. I think it depends what sort of build that you have going. But I think the way that you've built Robert McIntyre seems to make more sense with the type of golfer that you've already taken in terms of that golfer profile. And maybe if you'd built a little bit different, like how the audience started with Noren and Fleetwood, going like a high Satsune route could actually be complimentary in terms of what that golfer might be. And I think it was Zach Jeffers in the chat who mentioned, you know, whether we look like a skill set kind of stack this week. And I don't think that's a bad way to approach the week in a week where we're still somewhat guessing what the golf course is going to play like. So, I do like the play. I think he's playing a lot better. And we've seen him perform well at courses where driving, total driving particularly, has been a strong indicator, which I do think is going to be effective this week. So I'm going to go and use up all my salary this week because I can, and I'm being greedy. But I think Matt Wallace has been played a bit better than we perhaps give him credit for. He's got that ability to really scramble his short game's excellent, which I think is going to be important this week to really keep the round going. He was fourth at the Byron Nelson recently, 20th at the Myrtle Beach, and then showed up at the PGA Championship and finished 43rd on a golf course that I thought was probably a little bit too long for him. In saying that, he has been adding a lot of driving distance to his game lately this year. And I think that he's got potential to play at kind of one of these tree-lined golf courses, which I think will suit his game from experience over on the DP World Tour.
I definitely endorse that pick. I will tell you, before I picked Shane Lowry, my contemplation was between Cam Young and Matt Wallace, or Shane Lowry and it was Seamus Power, which I had to pivot again. But Matt Wallace was the guy I was definitely considering. I think you said it right. His short game is around the green. You know, when he has one of those weeks where he spikes with the approach, that's when he gets you those great results. He could do that this week, and if he does, I think a top 15 finish for him is very much so in play. So endorsed by me for sure. Spence, I think I saw you nodding. Would love your take on Matt Wallace and then your last pick with 5,700 remaining.
I like the Matt Wallace selection. I do want to comment that is a wild move from Danny when the audience was making their pick. Nobody in show's history has ever taken Robbie Shelton, I don't think. And trying to get the audience to take Robbie Shelton from me, seeing that he's probably the highest person in my model there, it's a very interesting move there. I am going to take Robbie Shelton. There's obviously a lot of boom or bust potential that's going to come into play here, but 26th in my model for weighted scrambling. He's 23rd for me in that height and proximity plus short game. I'm going to hope that what we got last week from him with the ninth place finish will be able to continue. He's been very, as I said, hit and miss. There's the miscut at the Byron Nelson. There's two 33rd place finishes at the Valero and the Valspar. There's a bunch of miscuts at the Houston Open and the Players. So you're getting one end of the spectrum each time with it. I know what I'm signing up for. I don't love that he is starting to move up in ownership because of that finish. If this could have been a situation where we didn't have the result, my model would probably like him just about as much, and it would be more of an advantageous spot to jump into. But in this position that I'm in with the price tag that I have, I would have preferred to have gotten up to Jacob Bridgman. I can't afford him. And while my model likes Aaron Baddeley this week, there's just no upside there. Like, I don't want to put Baddeley into a lineup where he is also gaining some traction. I'll take a shot here with Robbie Shelton and hope for the best, because I do like the top four golfers I have. I think there's a pretty safe profile. And then you're going to need something a little special from the last two, but there's nothing to say that that can't happen.
Well, I'll start by saying one of the options you had down there, Robbie Shelton, in my opinion, was the right pick. So I like that. And two, I can confirm, I don't remember when it was, but I've definitely taken him once before, I think last year. So this is not the first time he's been taken. Maybe at least once. I know I've drafted Robbie Shelton on this show. But probably, I don't know why I'm saying it like it's a good thing. It's probably a bad thing. It's not like Robbie Shelton's anything to call home about. But that's a wrap for this draft. We had some fun tonight. Let us know whose team you think is going to win, as we do every week. We will report back next week and crown a winner. But we're not done yet. Don't forget to hit the like button and give us a follow. It goes a long way. Also, if you haven't done so yet, sign up for Win Daily. Get in Discord. Before the week's end, you'll get Stephen's ownership article, which is the best ownership article in the business. You can see how guys are trending, some of the guys we discussed ownership on. Get that final number. We will also give you weather updates in Discord so you can understand first round leader plays. If anything changes, if there's any weather edges, we'll let you know. We'll post outright tickets, betting plays that you prefer. Get in there. It'll be worth its money after 1 week without a question of a doubt, and it will go a long way. Before we get you out of here tonight, though, we do still have our first round leader plays. And we'll start with you, David. Who are you looking at in the first round leader market?
I've only got three this week, and part of that is going to be the nature of my first selection. We've spoken about this on the show recently, where we've got a very, very clear favorite at the top of the betting market in Rory McIlroy, who's $5 to win the golf tournament. But you can give him a first-round leader at $15. He's getting a morning tee time, which I do think is going to be better. As Spence alluded to at the start of the show with the course breakdown, that the course is probably going to play a bit softer. So you're getting triple the odds of his win odds to come out and win a win at first round leader market. And that does tend to be the way that Rory McIlroy wins golf tournaments, as he leads from the front with a strong first round. So that's going to be the first pick. Then two still pretty short, but not too much. We've got Alex Noren at 40-1 this week. Again, I have some questions about his ability to close a golf tournament, but he can certainly get hot for one round. Very, very good putter. And you're getting more than double his win odds with his first round lead a lot odds at the moment. Again, gets a morning tea time. And someone that we didn't take on the draft cast that I was kind of looking to take at one point, never got round to it just because of the way that players went before me. But that was Keith Mitchell. I think Keith Mitchell is just like ball striking it so well at the moment. Plenty of driving distance without losing driving accuracy. I think that could be a really good recipe here. Again, he gets morning tea time, and you can get him at 60-1 in the first round leader market. So that feels like very good value when he's priced sometimes as low as sort of 35-40-1 in the win market.
Boom. I love it. All right, Spence, first round leaders. Who are you looking at?
I agree with David. I don't have it on my card currently. I only have two right now. I do think Keith Mitchell at 60-1 is an interesting look with his ball striking ability. The two plays I have right now, Bo Hostler, 100-1, Tom Kim, 50-1. I talked about Kim and the reasons why I liked him. Hostler gives you such a interesting profile here because he's one of the biggest differences that I have from safety versus upside here. The upside numbers really like him. The safety numbers have gone in the wrong direction, but this is the exact market where we can get away with trying to bet on that upside here. So about at 100-1, his ability to make putts and have distance was very intriguing for this course.
Boom. I love it. I love it. I also want to grace you. Thank you. See ya. Appreciate you stopping by in the chat and dropping some first round leader plays. See ya is on Alex Noren and Sam Burns. And for long shots, he's on Meisner and Norlander. If you know anything about Sia, he gets red hot in that first round leader market. So take a look at those plays. Before we get you out of here, my first round leader plays, I really do like, I know I mentioned him a lot at the end of the draft, Seamus Power at 80-1. I think that's a good number. We've seen him pop early in rounds before. I also like Canadian Mackenzie Hughes at 50-1, Shane Lowry at 35-1. And of course, Cameron Young, a guy who we always see starts hot, maybe doesn't finish always, but he always tends to come out hot when he has a good week at 35-1. I think even if it's not one of those two guys I mentioned, I think that 35-1 number, there's about four or five guys there, is the number. The better golfers in this field, I think it's a really good value on getting one of the top four or five golfers in the tournament at 35-1. I would play any of those guys in that 35-1 range on DraftKings. That is a wrap for tonight. We appreciate you guys stopping by. Big week. We'll have some fun, and we'll do it again next week. Did I forget anything?
Sports.
There you go. Appreciate it.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
If your small business is booming, you might say, cha-ching, but you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.